Thank you, Rabbi Meir Danek, and I want to, prestigious esteemed rabbis, and I want to thank Congregation Av Sachem for hosting the event this evening. One of the beautiful things about our community is the unity that prevails, and that we do things as a community and not as separate shuls, and this is a manifestation of that. I also want to thank the ACT leadership, the very unbelievable committee of people who are really devoted. I don't take credit for what they've accomplished. They're a very talented group of people, and they put together a very extremely professional and polished program. They've accomplished an enormous amount, and they're the ones that deserve they really deserve all the credit. The ACT program, if you're not yet a member, I cannot encourage you strongly enough to participate. I think all of us are interested, have a desire to make changes in our lives. As we go through life, we have certain dreams that we'd like to perhaps be different in various ways, but it's very hard to focus on those aspirations and bring it into a reality. And what ACT does is it creates a program by which it's possible to make those changes. It's a very simple idea. It's an idea that gives a focus, spend a few minutes a day. It's a commitment that's made to via an organization. There's a person is signs up. There's a website. You feel connected. You feel part of a community that's participating in the program. And it's virtually impossible that if a person spends a few minutes a day focused on the various modules that ACT is going to establish, that it's virtually impossible that a person should not change. And I know myself that this past 2 months the focus was chesed, and although whatever those things that I read, or most of the things I had known already in the past, but I feel that it had a tremendous impact on my own personality and my own character, and it's something that is really a phenomenal opportunity for everybody to implement changes in their lives. My topic tonight is Dan Lekav Zchus, because judging people favorably, that is the new module is beginning tomorrow. There are books for sale in the hallway and sign-up sheets that are available to you. The way I phrased the topic was, is Dan Lekav Zchus, is judging people favorably, is that shrewdness or is it naivete? I think it's a very good topic. It's a very good question. I posed this very same question last week. I spoke to NCSY, to a group of young NCSY members. I took advantage of the fact that I was preparing this topic, so I spoke on this very same topic, and I posed this as a question to them. I asked them, what do you think? Is it naive or is it shrewd to be Dan Lekav Zchus? And almost everyone agreed that it's naive. One of the members of my shul approached me, I shared this with Philip Rosen, and he said, it's such an intriguing topic, he says, I'm almost motivated to come hear what you have to say. So I'm glad to see that the rest of you were indeed curious enough to know how I respond to the question, is it shrewdness or is it naivete? And indeed, I think most people, if you had asked them, they would say, to be Dan Lekav Zchus requires being a little bit dull or not thinking or putting on blinders, and it's a form of naivete. And if you review the halachos are very basic. The being Dan Lekav Zchus is a mitzvah aseh, it's a biblical commandment, and the Chofetz Chaim quotes from various sources that the application of the mitzvah is as follows, that if the person is a tzaddik, somebody who you know always does the right thing, or generally speaking does the right thing, then even if the person does something that is almost impossible to explain as not being inappropriate, there's an obligation to be Dan Lekav Zchus. If the person is a beinoni, the person is somebody who sometimes he vacillates, sometimes he does things right, sometimes wrong. Probably Most of us fall into the category of Beinonim. We're not consistent, generally speaking. So the Chofetz Chaim says that the requirement to be Dalek HaSchus is when things are 50-50, when there's equal possibility that the person did something right or he didn't do something right, then you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. But he says that nonetheless, even though there's no requirement, but if a person, even if in a situation where it's convincingly apparent that the person acted improperly, there's still a midas chasidus. It's still appropriate, even though you're not required to do so, but it's still appropriate to give the person the benefit of the doubt. So that idea of giving the person the benefit of the doubt applies not only both in terms of tzaddik, it's requirement, but a beinoni, it's not required, but it's preferable. Even though the evidence is heavily weighed against the person, you should give the person the benefit of the doubt. And that does seem to be rather naive, that a person should just close his eyes and say, yeah, there's probably nothing was wrong. And I'd like to demonstrate to you that it's not possible that the mitzvah of being Dalek HaSchus is a requirement that a person should be naive. First, it's just the basic logic dictates that the Torah would not require a person to be naive. It doesn't make any sense that the Torah would want a person to behave like a fool. In the Haggadah, when you have the Arba Banim, the Haggadah delineates the four children. So there's the Eniyadei Lishol and the Tam, and then there's the Rasha. Who's the counterpart to the Rasha? So you would think the counterpart to the Rasha should be the Tzaddik. The Rasha is the evil one, the Tzaddik is the righteous one. But that's not the case. The counterpart to the Rasha is the Chacham. Why is that? Why is the counterpart to the Tzaddik the Chacham, the Rasha the Chacham? So it's obvious because to be a Tzaddik you have to be a Chacham. There's no such thing. A person who is just a foolish person, that's not called being a tzaddik. A tzaddik has to be well thought out, has to think through things, and that's how you become a tzaddik. The tzaddik and the chacham are one and the same. And if this mitzvah of being Dalek HaSchus requires a person to be simple-minded, to be the tam, then such a person can't be a tzaddik. He's not acting as a chacham. Furthermore, the basis for the mitzvah of being Dalek HaSchus is a pasuk in the Torah, "Betzedek tishpot amisecha," that you should judge your friend favor with righteousness. And the rabbis say that, what does that mean? It means that you should give the person the benefit of the doubt. Now I ask you, why is that referred to as betzedek, with righteousness? The word tzedek comes from that, from the word means justice. That it's just to judge a person favorably. That's the right thing. Why is that just? I would characterize it as magnanimous, as something that's an act of kindness or chesed, be nice to the person. But the Torah doesn't characterize it that way. It characterizes it as betzedek. It's something that is the just thing to do. That's the proper, it's the appropriate thing to do. So clearly, you see that it's not a mitzvah that you should be generous to the person and be nice to the person, but it's a requirement that a person should be just and even within the framework of what's appropriate, it logically and intellectually, a person should be Dalek HaSchus. So the question remains, though, why in fact, perhaps I have proven that being Dalek HaSchus is not naivete. But why isn't it naivete? If most of the evidence is stacked against the person, why should you close your eyes and give the person the benefit of the doubt? I have to digress for a moment. I received an email recently. You'll forgive me for going off the topic for a moment, but I this is very important. I received an email from a member of the VAD informing me that emails with pictures of Osama bin Laden are being sent, and the moment you open these emails, your computer will crash and you'll not be able to fix it. He asked me to please inform everyone, and in fact, subsequently, I received the same email from maybe 30, 40 people, and this is The email goes on to say that this is the worst virus announced by CNN. It's been classified by Microsoft as the most destructive virus ever, and the virus was discovered by McAfee. And I'm sharing this with you as a public service. The real reason why I'm sharing it with you is because my favorite website is called Snopes, S-N-O-P-E-S. I receive these types of emails with urgent messages that please inform everyone. I receive them at the OU maybe once a week. Another urgent message that I have printed out here that I received 2 weeks ago was that New Jersey is launching a 30-day speeding ticket frenzy. The state needs to generate $9 million in speeding tickets, and $1 million will go to pay state troopers overtime, and there will be 50 state troopers on duty at all times patrolling the 9 main intersections and highways, and they list all the highways that you should stay away from, I-95, I-80, with 287, and this has been confirmed by 101.5, no less, on the FM, and other important sources. You go to Snopes. Snopes is a myth-busting website, Urban Legends, and they must have over 1,000 of these types of alerts that people make their way around on the internet. This one, the second one that I read to you about the speeding tickets, I've been receiving that for the last 2 years, once a month. That this month the state police are going on a frenzy. So the reason why I bring this up is because what this demonstrates is that people are naive. It's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah being dong kaschus is not to be naive. The one that the people by nature are naive. People are gullible and people believe things without critically thinking through the things that they are told. And that's why these types of emails, and I don't want to embarrass people, there's a CC on this email. It was sent to about 100 people, and many of them sent it, after they received it, they sent it back to me, people sent to their, to all the people on their email list. And people buy into this. People believe it because especially, it's confirmed by McCaffrey and it's on CNN. How do you know it was on CNN? Well, it says in the email that it was on CNN. So that proves it. And it just shows how gullible we are by that's human nature, that people, and especially when you feel that there's something that you know that nobody else knows. It's like secret information. The government's not going to tell you. It's not going to be reported in the New York Times that you found out from a friend of yours who ordered from his cousin's brother's sister, and they know for sure that the police are giving out tickets this month, so you have inside information. Everybody wants to have inside information. And people buy into that type of thing. And people formulate unjustified opinions all the time. And even when we're positive that this is for sure the way it is, people make mistakes. If you a very powerful example of how a person can make an error is the story, the famous story of Chana that we read on Rosh Hashanah. That Chana comes to Yerushalayim with her husband, and she is childless. And she's standing in the Beis HaMikdash davening for a child. And Chazal used that, her tefillah, as the paradigm for what it means to daven with Kavanah. The Gemara in Brachos has a long discussion, Tublat, where we derive, many of the halachas of tefillah are derived from Chana, because she davened with tremendous feeling and sincerity. She serves as the model for tefillah. Eli, who was the Kohen Gadol, he was the leader of the Jewish people, and he was a very old man. How did he interpret what Chana was doing? He came into the Beis HaMikdash, and he saw Chana mumbling, and what does he say to her? He says that, how long are you going to be drunk? You come to the Beis HaMikdash, and you mumble like a drunkard. That's how Eli understood. He was a great person, maybe he was even a prophet, a Navi, and still Eli was so far off base in thinking that Chana, whose tefillah is the one of the primary examples of what it means to daven with Kavana, instead of recognizing that she was davening with Kavana, Eli thought that she was a common drunkard. And in life, we make countless mistakes. And there's just such a wealth of stories to illustrate how we jump to conclusions that are totally unwarranted. One of my favorite stories is in the Maggid Speaks, there's a story of a Mr. Feingold who lived in Ashdod in Eretz Yisrael, and he was making a simcha, but his family had no means. They were a poor family. So a group of friends in the neighborhood raised funds so they could make a modest wedding. So everybody was very pleased with them that they were able to provide the funds for the Feingold family. They come to the wedding and they see that there's this super fancy, lavish affair going on. And everybody was highly offended that here they thought that the Feingolds had no money, and look, they're making with a smorgasbord and a view table, and they're spending a fortune of money on a simcha. And if they had money, so why'd they take the tzedakah money from the tzibur? It wasn't right. And the people were just everybody was talking about it the whole evening. The following day, Mr. Feingold went to the local rav, and he said, "I need your help." He said, "I know that everybody is angry at my family and myself that we made such a fancy wedding." He said, "And we would too. I mean, if we were in that situation, we know what the kind of things that we would have said. You know, look at the kind of person he is, and you see how people are take advantage. You know, all the common types of expressions that people use." So he said to the rav, he said, "Look, the people gave me a modest sum to make the wedding. I took the money and I went to the caterer. And when I met the caterer discovered that my father had saved their family during the Holocaust. And my father was able to hide members of the family. And the caterer, the woman who was the caterer, felt such tremendous hakaras hatov to the family that she insisted that she's going to make my wedding into a beautiful affair. And I didn't even realize at the time what she meant by that, to what extent. And she made me promise that I wouldn't say anything. She said, I'm doing it on one condition, that you please will not reveal the fact that I am making it more beautiful." He said he thought she would make, you know, put out some flowers or something. He comes to the affair. He was as stunned as much as everybody else to see that she made a magnificent affair. So he went back to her the next day and he said, "Listen, you've got to release me from my promise because the people are ready to kill me." So she said, "It's okay, I understand under the circumstances." And therefore he went to the Rav and he asked for his assistance to let people know what had actually transpired. And this is just one of countless stories where people jump to conclusions that are not appropriate. And what the mitzvah of Betzedek Tishbot Amitzecha teaches, that you should judge your neighbor or your friend favorably, what it teaches is that if you jump to a conclusion, then you are the fool. The mitzvah of Betzedek Tishbot Amitzecha is precisely, it's bedafka, a mitzvah to be shrewd. It's not a mitzvah to be naive. It's a mitzvah to be shrewd. It's like a scientist. Scientists do not jump to conclusions. Scientists run tests and they have controls and they run the tests over and over again and they question their results. And a person has to be like a scientist. A person, one has to investigate, one has to ask questions, one has to approach the person and talk to them and find out if they know all the circumstances, because as the Chofetz Chaim points out in a number of places, all you need is that you're missing one little tiny piece of information and it changes the whole story dramatically. And that's the mitzvah to be done on Kav Shlus. Therefore, very appropriately, the Torah calls it Betzedek, or refers to it as Betzedek Tishbot Amitzecha. with righteousness or in a just fashion, you should judge people, because that's the just way. Not to formulate, even where it seems that the evidence is strongly indicates that the person acted improperly, doesn't make a difference. If a person is shrewd, then a person will inquire, a person will ask, a person will investigate before they jump to conclusions. Even having said that, even if intellectually we know that this is the case, it's still very difficult to be done with kafskos, to judge favorably. I always tell the story, and I shared this with Rabbi Fran, and he made this the story. In fact, I think it was he spoke in this shul on the topic of Dalin Kafskos maybe 7-8 years ago, and he quoted this story from me. It's just a mild joke. The story was a fellow who wanted to be in a play, and he was an aspiring actor, and finally he landed a small part in a play, and his line was, it's a famous story, his line was that when the cannon would blast, then after hearing the sound of the cannon, he would say, "Hark, I hear the cannon roar." And the fellow was so excited, he practiced his lines day and night, "Hark, I hear the cannon roar, hark, I hear the cannon roar." He had it down pat. Comes the big day of the play, and he's standing on stage, and everything is live, and there's this big boom from the cannon, and he turns around and says, "Hey, what in the world was that?" So here he knew his lines called, but when it came compelling reality, when he heard the cannon go off, it blew him away. He forgot his lines. And that's what happens when it comes to being down with Kafskos. Intellectually, maybe we know that it's illogical not to judge favorably, it's shrewd to give the person the benefit of the doubt. But irrespective of what we know intellectually, when it comes a live situation, the cannon goes off, and there we are at it again. I have a close friend who I have this conversation with him once a week. He keeps on coming to me with stories, and each time I say, "Did you investigate? Did you talk to the person yet?" "No, this," I said, "remember last time you didn't give the person the benefit? This time is different. This time." And in fact, he also keeps on sending me these emails of alerts. And I said, "Did you check Snopes?" Each time he said, "Did you?" "No, this time I don't have to check Snopes." I said, "Go on Snopes. It's easy. Do a search. Put in a keyword. You'll find it. Almost all the stuff is in Snopes." But he each time, he's just so convinced this time is different than it was last time. And what you see is that people, by nature, have a tendency to believe things that they are told, especially when you find out something, or that either what you're told or what you see. People have a certain negative pleasure in finding out something negative about another person that nobody else knows, and having a taina on the person. And the question is, so how do we overcome it? If it's part of human nature that we are both gullible, and there's also a certain negative enjoyment that we have of seeing something wrong with another person, so how do we overcome that? And the way to overcome that is in two ways. And the first way is that to study the topic, to read as many stories as we can about situations where you, until you come to the end of the story, it's like Paul Harvey says, and now you know the rest of the story. Until you get to that last line, you're convinced that this is it, and then you find everything gets turned upside down. That's one thing. One important avenue that we should pursue. And the other is to learn from our own experiences. And every single person has experiences almost on a daily basis where we formulate opinions about things that are not valid. And if we would keep a log of those experiences, that would be even more instructive than reading a story written by somebody else about their experiences. We could create our own book of stories where we make a mistake and we don't give the benefit of the doubt. I had a situation. I was the object of somebody being done me, not with kafskos. this past Friday. I was in the supermarket, and as is often the case, it was I'm always late, and it was about a half hour before Shabbos, and I was a big rush, and the emergency, I had to buy something, and I come to the line. There's this long line, and I didn't know what to do. And then, out of the blue, woman in charge of the store comes over to me. She says, "Here, I'm opening up this line. Stand on this line." So I went to that line. In the meantime, as I'm putting my things out on the counter, I hear some man mumbling in the background. Look at that guy. He sneaks into the line. I open up a line, and he sneaks into the line. So I turned around, I said, "Sir, I didn't sneak into the line. The person told me to stand there, but you're right, you go first." I took all my things off. He says, "No," he says, "my wife told me that I shouldn't have said anything." at least he was listening to his wife. But he was missing one piece of information. I mean, indeed, if the line opened up and there's a long line, I shouldn't sneak into the line. But I didn't sneak. The person who was in charge told me to, maybe I shouldn't, even the person in charge told me I shouldn't have done it. But it changes the entire complexion of the story when you know that little piece of information. And that's the type of story to write down. And if we would pay attention, we would find such incidents happen to us on a daily basis. And these two approaches of keeping a record of our own experiences and reading stories written by others, that's what ACT is. That's what I just described is the ACT program. It's a commitment to spend a few minutes a day reading a text that focuses on being down in Kapstus with very effective and powerful stories, and secondly, keeping a log of our own, because what the mitzvah of being Dalal Kapslus requires is that a person should be able to learn from our own experiences. It's difficult. It may be logical to be the Dalal Kapslus, but it's difficult. It runs against human nature. And by keeping a log, that's how we're able to learn to be Dalal Kapslus. And ACT provides this framework for us. There's a second way, a very important element in being Dalal Kapslus, and that is, in addition to learning from our own experiences and other people's experiences, the other aspect of being Dalal Kapslus is that we have to develop Ahavas Yisrael. Because if you love somebody, then even if it's true that human nature is that we like to see faults in people and we're quick to jump on others and we have kindness, but when it's a member of your family, people are never Dan Lukavskos. People who are Kav Kov. People are always Dan Lukavskos. My wife is a teacher, and she's had many experiences where she's met with parents and she's told them things about their children, and you would think that they would be so upset, and instead they're able to say, "Oh, my child is so creative, and look how cute they are," and things like that, because that's human nature. That people, and certainly when it comes to ourselves, we all judge ourselves favorably. We don't see the faults in ourselves. We all give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. But it's true of family members. If somebody tells us something about our children, so we say. Somebody comes to me and says, your child beat up my child. So you figure maybe something happened, or what's the whole story. You don't get upset right away. You go ask your child, what was the story, what were the circumstances, because when it's your own family, you're Dalal Kapslus. And if we practice Ahavas Yisrael, so that allows us instinctively to be Dalal Kapslus. It's what in Jewish literature is referred to as the quality of being malamitzlus, that a Jew has to be malamitzlus, has to look for explanations to justify the behavior of one's fellow Jew and of Klal Yisrael. Robert Kreitman showed me a beautiful thought in the Kedushas Levi. The Kedushas Levi is a sefer written by the Bardichever Rebbe, and the Bardichever Rebbe was famous for being Dalal Kapslus. There's a famous story, before I tell you what he says in the Parsha, but there's a famous just one of many famous stories, the Berditcheva Rebbe, which you probably all know. He was walking on Yom Kippur and he saw a Jew smoking a cigarette. So he said, Rabbi Yid, he says, do you know that today is Yom Kippur? And he says, yes, I know, Rabbi. And he says, do you know they're not supposed to smoke on Yom Kippur? And he said, yes, I know that also. So he turns to the heavens, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, look how great Klal Yisrael is. Here's a person who's on the holiest day of the year, he's smoking a cigarette, but he still won't tell a lie. That's what it means to be Melamed Zchus, to find the good and to be able to justify the behavior of a fellow Jew and of Klal Yisrael. So the Berditcheva says, when Moshe Rabbeinu asked the Ribbono Shel Olam to appoint a successor, so he says, Yifkod Hashem Elokei HaRuchos, Isha HaEda. He refers to God as Elokei HaRuchos Shel Kol Basar, as the God of the spirit of all flesh. So you never find that God is referred to as Elokei HaRuchos Shel Kol Basar. Why is that description of God used at this particular time? Rashi has a famous explanation, but the Berditcheva said, because the Ribbono Shel Olam knows that even though human beings oftentimes act inappropriately, many times it's because a person has the yoke of earning a livelihood, and therefore, in order to be under tremendous pressure, and therefore we make certain compromises, and we don't spend enough time learning, or we're in a rush to leave davening, and we're sometimes not totally honest in our business dealings because of the enormous pressure. And the Ribbono Shel Olam makes allowances for the Jewish people because they are basar v'dam, because they are flesh and blood. So Moshe Rabbeinu is asking God that you understand the spirit of the flesh and blood, appoint a leader who's also able to be Melamed Zchus, who's able to look at the Jewish people and not get excited and angry and with fire and brimstone blast his congregation or his flock, but on the contrary, to be Melamed Zchus, to justify the behavior of the Jewish people. And when we approach the mitzvah of being Melamed Zchus, that those of us who are going to sign up for ACT for the next few months, this module, this is what we're going to focus on. The mitzvah requires that we should change our mindset. It's a different way of looking at people. And again, it's human nature. We fall into that trap. Somebody does something and you get upset, and then you have a taina on the person. And people don't, by nature, we're all this way. We don't let go of kindness. People bear a grudge and they're upset and they see faults in other people. And it requires a positive effort to change our focus, to think to ourselves that this is a person that I should be loving. The Ribbono Shel Olam loves the Jewish people. That's what Chavetz Chaim writes many times also, that God does not appreciate it when we're down with Kavkova, because he loves the Jewish people. For the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Jewish people are his children. A father does not appreciate it when somebody comes into his house and tells him all the frustrations of his children, all the faults. A father it appreciates a friend who comes in and is Melamed Zchus on his children. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam was looking for. And that's, we have to train ourselves to have a different mindset in terms of our relationship to our fellow man. And I think that these are the two aspects of the mitzvah. If we are going to focus on being down with Kav Zchus for the next few weeks, these are the two areas that we have to focus on. Number one is to learn from experience that it's naive and that it's foolish and that we're being gullible if we're not down with Kav Zchus, if we don't give people the benefit of the doubt. And secondly, to change our mindset in terms of our relationship with people. When we see somebody acting in a way that we feel is inappropriate, if we will love that person instead of being upset at the person, then they will look for ways in order to justify the person's behavior. I want to make just a final concluding remark. The value of being down with Kav Zchus, this mitzvah, the Tzedek Tisha B'Av Yisrael, number one, this is a mitzvah saseh. It's not something the Chofetz Chaim writes. It's not just like a nice thing, it's a nice midah to do. It's something that we're required by halacha. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs to be done with kapslus. We derive it from the pasuk of the tzedek tishvah on amisecha. And the Gemara writes as well, Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chazayin says, Adon chaveru kapslus, don emosu kapslus, that if we judge our neighbor favorably, then God will judge us favorably as well. I saw a fantastic thought from the Baal Shem Tov, which is perfect for my conclusion in this regard. Our minds are, as Rabbi Miadanik very appropriately said, our minds are on Eretz Yisrael. And I think that the mitzvah of being down with Kapskos ties in very much to the crisis that exists in Eretz Yisrael. And listen to this shot, or this thought of the Baal Shem Tov. It's a magnificent thought that the Baal Shem Tov says. I was going to say it by accident, but there are no accidents. It was with Hashkocha that I saw such a powerful thought from the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says, and he's elucidating the Gemara that I just quoted. The Gemara says that if you judge a person with kapslus, if you give a person the benefit of the doubt, then God will give us the benefit of the doubt as well. And the Chafetz Chaim elaborates a lot on this, and he says that if you take a look at our mitzvos, it's easy to poke holes in our mitzvos. It's easy to find this mitzvah was done without kavanah, this mitzvah was done without ulterior motive. So if God is going to be critical, it's like in school, you have a teacher who's a strict marker, you can wipe anybody out. If God's going to be a strict marker, so then all of our mitzvahs are going to fall to the wayside, and then the averus will be magnified. On the other hand, if God will judge us with kapskus, so then, even though maybe sometimes we do things that are inappropriate, but God puts it into perspective, like the Badishiva says, because of the Parnasa, the yoke of earning a livelihood, and other factors that play a role, we're human beings, and therefore God judges us favorably. So, but listen to what the Baal Shem Tov says, where he explains the application of this Gemara, that Adon Taveru Kapskus, Donam Oslo Kapskus, that if you judge your neighbor to Kapskus, then God judges you with Kapskus as well. The Baal Shem Tov says that he quotes the famous story in Navi, that when David HaMelech saw Bathsheba, and he coveted Bathsheba, so he went and he sent Bathsheba's husband Uri Achiti off to the battlefield where he was killed, and then he married Bathsheba. So Nathan HaNavi was sent by God to David HaMelech, and he tells David HaMelech a story about a rich man and a poor man, and the rich man had a large flock, and the poor man only had one lamb, and the rich man had company. And what does he do? He goes and he wants to make a meal for his company. He steals the one tevis that the poor man has, and he slaughters it and he uses it for his meal. So David HaMelech is enraged, and he says that person is a ben maves, and it's a terrible thing. That David thought it was a real story. So then Nathan HaNavi turns to David and he says, Atah Ha'ish, you're the person. The story is about you. You're the person who the story is about. So the Baal Shem Tov says that the Ribono Shel Olam, when we perform, when we do our mitzvos, and sometimes we fall, and we do things that are inappropriate, the Ribono Shel Olam arranges situations where now the Ribono Shel Olam has a choice. Should he be danus with kapskus or kapkov? Should he judge us favorably, or should he not judge us favorably? Should he judge us in a strict way? So the Ribono Shel Olam arranges that we should have situations that are similar to the very same situation that we found ourselves in. Disguised, where somebody else did something similar to what maybe we did. And then it's a test to see, how are we going to judge the other person? And if we judge the other person strictly, with Danim Lekapova, then the Ribono Shel Olam turns to us. I mean, we don't hear it, but this is what's going on in the Shemayim. And he says, Atayish, you're the guy. What you saw somebody else doing was just a mashal. It was like a parable. Like nothing other. Atayish, you're the person. This whole story is about you. You're making the decision. You're deciding now, by the way you judge somebody else, you're deciding your own fate, And then after 120 years, we're going to come into Shemayim, and we're going to see how God orchestrated our lives and things that happened to us, and we're going to be upset. And we'll, why did you treat me this way? Why were you so strict? And God's going to say, Ata ha'ish, you're the one that made the decision, because you it's almost identical situation where which was parallel, and you judged the other person with Kafkova, so that's how I judged you as well. And I would say that given the terrible crisis that exists in Eretz Yisrael, Klal Yisrael needs to have the greatest favor in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel'olam. There's in the Medrash it says that when the Jewish people were going through the Yamsuf, so there was a judgment going on in the Shemayim, and the Kaddish Baruch Hu said, the Malachim were saying, Halo of the Avodah Zarah, Halo of the Azara, who should be saved? Should it be the why should we save the Jews and not the Egyptians? There was a judgment going on, and God decided, God made the decision He was going to save the Jewish people. So when the Jews are in a state of crisis, we're being judged constantly, and particularly when there's a state of crisis, we're being judged by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what we need at a time like this is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should judge Klal Yisrael with Kaf Zchus. And if we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to judge with Kaf Zchus, so that we should be victorious over our enemies and the evil that is being perpetrated by people who are just, the level of evil is just beyond imagination, the inflicting pain and terror and innocent victims. If we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us the upper hand, then, and we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to judge us favorably and to say, all right, so we have certain shortcomings, Klal Yisrael, you do certain things that are not so appropriate and they're not always 100%, but there's an explanation to all that, there's a reason for it. If we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to judge us that way, then we have to judge, we have to do our part. If we judge Klal Yisrael that way, then the Ribbono Shel'olam will judge Klal Yisrael that way as well. And let us hope in Mirtz Hashem we should be able to very quickly hear Yeshua's and the Chamos coming from Eretz Yisrael. Achenu Chobeis Yisrael and the Sunim Mitzvah of Yeshivya, those who are in captivity, those who have been wounded, there should be no more terrorist attacks, and there should be Yeshua from Ribbono Shel'olam, and we should be able to excel in this mitzvah of being Dan L'Kapslus.